So it is a pleasure today. It is May 10th, 2021, and I get to introduce someone I have known for decades and respected and appreciated for decades, Robert Witherspoon. He is the founder and president of Performance and Leadership Development, LTD, an executive coaching and OD consulting firm. He has been hailed as a thought leader, woo, and a pioneer in executive coaching. Yes, us folks who have all that experience get these wonderful accolades, which we deserve. And he is a published author and recognized authority on executive coaching and leadership development and organizational learning. He has over 2,500 hours in leadership development and executive coaching and organizational learning. I think all three of those. Coaching leaders. Hi, Jerry. Welcome. And he's been doing this since 1990, which is when I think I met him. Robert is also credentialed with the PCC. So it is my great pleasure. Hello, everybody who's just joined us. Welcome. I am now going to turn this over to Robert Witherspoon. If you have questions, which I am sure you will, put them in the chat and I will get them to Robert that way. Okay, and we'll have a question and answer period at the end also. So using assessments with executive clients, what's that all about, Robert?
Well, thank you so much, Jerry. It's been great to know and appreciate you over the years.
I didn't tell any of our stories. I just went professional.
Not this morning, yeah. I'm excited to be here today because personality assessments and the Hogans, as I call them in short, that's short for the Hogan Leadership Suite that I use in coaching executives, are one of the most important matters I've learned professionally and personally over my lifetime. So to illustrate this, I'd like to invite you to consider a thought experiment. So as context, consider maybe a friend or a client with certain behavioral tendencies, some of which work well for them, some of them not so well. You might have even coached them about these behaviors and why they tend to get in the way. They could be changed, but they keep coming back. That's, of course, as we all know, because change requires thought, effort, and lots of time to practice the new ways of doing things, not to mention to change the perceptions of others, which typically takes longer than changing the behaviors themselves. So some highly motivated people can make a change, but even there's typically slippage as they fall back into old behaviors. And that's because our wiring is pretty hard to change. And like I said, altering the perception of others is even harder. So these fundamental tendencies are called behaviors, and they're getting expressed because they come out in an easy, efficient way, even though they don't work so well. Well, the Hogan assessments are designed to profile these behaviors as well as motives, and the scientists who have developed these have found a way to ask people a simple set of questions. Often they come across as kind of oddball questions. And then through a process I can describe later, I'm not a psychometrician, but I have a good idea of what they do behind closed doors. They've come up with a way to translate these questions about your identity into questions about your reputation. In other words, how you see yourself can be translated into what I call a statistical 360, as if people were actually observing your behaviors. And then they repeated this process a gazillion times. So the result is they have some assessments that are highly accurate and don't take a lot of time and effort the way most 360s do. So what? So this means that Hogan assessments and other personality assessments, I'm not trying to sell you on the Hogans particularly, not here to sell you about anything, but the Hogans are the ones that I use, and so I'm trying to share my personal experience. The Hogans provide a shortcut for getting more quickly into a coaching conversation that can make a difference about changing those behaviors that are of interest to your client. It's quicker because, for one thing, you can do the Hogans very quickly, get the results, sit down with the client and start discussing them immediately. And it's quicker because the Hogans, in my experience, don't usually raise the defenses that other types of feedback do. So here's the thought experiment. Consider this friend of yours or a client that you might be coaching. What's the coaching engagement, if you have one or would like to have one? And what are some other key features of his or her situation? So my exemplar is a person I'm going to call Riley to protect his or her confidentiality. And here are a few key features. Senior leader and senior vice president at a global NGO, leads a high impact $40 million a year program with a big team, deemed one of the top program leads in his organization. Now in his 50s, wants to maintain his high impact, improve his leadership effectiveness in his current role, so he's not looking to take over the CEO position. He's self-referred. He wanted coaching himself, was readily supported by his executive sponsor and boss. His top coaching focus was about what he called wearing thin, which he thought was a recurring pattern in his career. And I asked him what that meant. And it was kind of a nagging suspicion for him, but without many specifics. Had he gotten feedback about it? Well, he said yes in a prior role. At another organization, the CFO blackballed his promotion in the midst of a merger, so it was the usual case of two organizations going together, only one position instead of two, and the CFO blackballed him and said, Riley's always haranguing me. Some feedback that was passed back to Riley by his mentor. So Riley sensed that he was somehow abrasive, rubbing people the wrong way, but he was blind to what those behaviors were concretely, what was the specific impact on people, much less the root causes of his behaviors. So for Riley, we designed a coaching engagement, which began with discovery, like I just indicated, went on to assessments where I started with the Hogans and paired that with some multi-source feedback based on some stakeholder interviews and some other data, which we can get into later if you like. And there were a couple of other steps, which I won't go into now, but again, we can return to later if you like. The work is still in process. Well, so what for our topic today? Well, I would say, first of all, Riley's Hogan results helped jumpstart our coaching engagement by providing assessment data so that we could get started on the work without waiting for his 360. They led to broader and deeper insights and coaching conversations than would otherwise have been possible. And actually, the Hogans alone addressed his primary concern without even getting into the 360s. That said, the 360s were a surprise on that score, so I'll return to that story later. But I hope this gives you a little preview of where I'm headed. With that, let me turn to my objectives for the webinar, which, following Terry's good agenda, are first of all to discover why personality assessments matter in the first place to coaching leaders and organizations. Secondly, to identify some key pros and cons of personality assessments in my experience. Next, to identify some features and benefits of the Hogans, which make them different from maybe other assessments that you're familiar with. And then last and not least, to field your questions along the way and to share some resources towards the end. So with that, let me just also note a couple of working assumptions. One is that I refer to personality assessments, but my frame of reference is really the Hogans, because while I've used others, I'm most familiar with the Hogans, and that's the basis for what I'm offering. However, any well-validated personality inventory will do, particularly if it's paired with a good 360. Second working assumption is that I refer to a good 360, but not all 360s are created equal, and most, in my opinion, are seriously flawed. We can return to that if you're interested. Third, not all personality assessments are created equal, and some are very problematic, in my opinion. Fourth, not all clients need or want a personality assessment, and that's just fine for me. And fifth, not all coaches use personality assessments, and that's also okay with me. Last and not least, like I said earlier, I'm not trying to sell you on anything in this particular webinar, but just share some experience. So why do personality assessments matter for coaching leaders and organizations? First, because personality is the key factor, meaning the most important in driving leadership behaviors. There's a ton of science behind this. The best recent summary that I know is by Bob Hogan, who's one of the founders of the Hogan firm, along with his wife Joyce, and Rob Kaiser, who recently concluded, quote, personality is the best single predictor of leadership. And that was based on the latest available meta-analysis reviews of the research. And it's a talk they gave at the 2020 Society for Consulting Psychologists, which we were lucky to hold in February that year, just before COVID hit. So one of the resources that I can offer, if it's of interest to you, is a link to their presentation if you want to look at it. But, you know, to their point, personality predicts leadership behavior and performance two times better than intelligence. This makes a lot of sense. Again, I'm not a psychometrician. I came to coaching through the OD door. But this idea about the importance of personality makes great sense to me conceptually, because as you may know, Kurt Lewin, one of the founders of the field of organizational development, had this famous formula, which he proposed as a heuristic, a way to understand leaders and organizations, or any people in organization, which is that behavior is a function of the person and the environment. And he never offered specific stats or figures to back up his heuristic, but, you know, knowing his training, I bet he had some in mind. Anyway, so what for our topic today? Well, personality matters for leaders, and leaders matters for business results in public, private, and nonprofit organizations. And so I find the Hogans help me coach leaders in organizations, whether that be in the C-suite, whether it be leadership transitions, whether it's dealing with high potential talent, and so on. So the second reason I would say that personality is important is because personality is also the key driver for derailment risks, also known sort of euphemistically as career stallers and stoppers. But those are very real among leaders, first discovered in my experience decades ago by Morgan McCall and Mike Lombardo at the Center for Creative Leadership. And as you may know, their research has been replicated by others over time. And the current thinking is that these derailment risks affect 40 to 60% of leaders, because that's the failure rate among leaders. So that's the portion of leaders that derail at some point over the course of their career. And it's among many HR people, in my experience, sort of a hidden secret. They don't widely share it. That's too bad, I think. But it's a terrible stat for the leaders and for their organization, and it's largely avoidable given sound personality assessments and skillful coaching. Again, the Hogans help here because they measure these derailment risks, so they help me coach all kinds of leaders and organizations, especially those execs that score high in on one of the surveys. By the way, the average leader, or maybe I should put it other ways, leaders and organizations average about 4 derailers out of the 11 that are measured by the Hogans. So we typically have a lot to discuss in the course of a coaching session. Third, personality is also the key factor for short-term leadership, career success, because they measure motives. And motives, values, and preferences matter for career fit and job fit, as you probably know. And so the Hogans also help me coach not just leaders, but other professionals in their major career moves. So I'm working with several clients now who are mid-career professionals and are making major career moves, some cases to other organizations, in some cases because they're coming back after maternity leave, that kind of thing. And the Hogans are very helpful to them in figuring out, well, which organization should I be looking for to find the best work culture fit? And after that, what's a good job fit? Fourth reason is that personality is also a key factor for long-term career success, and that's partly because of what I've said already, but partly because of the ancient wisdom, which goes something like, wherever you go, there you are, meaning you always bring yourself to the new context, so you can't really get away from the personality. It's always going to show up somehow. And so for coaches, this may be a way of extending client relationships as your clients move through their career to other positions. And it's not unusual to revisit Hogan results in that context. So maybe I'll just pause there, Terry, to see if there are any questions that have come up in the chat box or whether I should just continue trying to forge ahead.
No questions in the chat, but does anyone have a curiosity they would like to explore at this point? Elena? Hi.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert. I have a question because here in Spain, we have a norm. It's not a law, but it's a norm regarding assessment. And the Association of Psychologists encourage psychologists and the society to do only psychometrics and use psychometrics if you are a psychologist. I don't know if in the United States it's the same, but here we have a norm that doesn't allow non-psychologists to use psychometrics.
Yeah.
Is the same in United States or?
Not exactly, and I'm not a psychologist. Like I said earlier, I came in through the OD door. I have a huge interest in psychology and appreciation for what they do. Hogan's can only be used by certified coaches and other consultants. The certification is quite rigorous, more than any that I've ever experienced. And I could go into that if it's of interest to you. But those are the conditions under which you can use Hogan. Here in the States. I think I understand where those norms come from over in Spain, which is, you know, the misuse of assessments by, you know, people who don't really know what they're doing. And I think that is a valid concern. So there's good reason for that, though. I think that goes a little bit too far for me. But then again, I'm not in your country.
So it's possible to have a certification and to
yes,
to know how to use it and those things.
Yes, yeah. And if you're interested in that, I'm sure you could pursue it with the Hogan people. They're very helpful. They have a global network. There are, I'm confident, Hogan distributors in Spain. The Hogan is available in multiple languages. I'm sure it's available in Spanish. And I'm sure somebody has figured out the answer to that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm going to throw something at you, Robert. You said personalities are made up of the... I'm in my words, the what's going on in the people and also the environment. These are the two factors, or genetics and environment. I don't know if it went as far as said genetics. And people don't change. It's hard to change. It's very hard to change. You said that at the beginning. I know that from personal experience. Now, a colleague of mine who is on this call, Raphael and I, published an article about why we felt assessments do not belong in the profession of coaching. Now, I came from a coaching point of view, and Raphael came from an organizational development point of view. He's now a coach, but at that time when we wrote it, and I will turn it over in a moment to you, Raphael. And, well, maybe I'll turn it over to you now. So, did you, Raphael?
Yes, so one of the things that I appreciate about coaching is how simple and how difficult it is to master. And it is the non-directive coaching, and it is the one that allows us to be for the client to emerge fully, that I appreciate. So I do both consulting and coaching. So for consulting, I use assessments, I use all the tools of the trade. But for coaching, I refrain from that, because it's almost like the information taken in the instrument that whichever one I choose to do somehow interferes with the concept of coaching, non-directive, the coaching mindset, specifically as Sun and some of the other coach training organizations use. So I wonder what you think. I want to hear your thoughts, Robert.
Yeah. So I can relate to what you're saying here. And perhaps if I were, more strict about things, I would use assessment as an OD consultant and coach in a non-directive way, but I don't make those distinctions. I think Raphael, you said that the assessment information could interfere with non-directive coaching. I think that's absolutely accurate, and the question is, for me, is it a good interference to be encouraged or not so good? So for starters, I always offer the Hogans as an option to clients, not a requirement. So if they want to have more of a non-directive conversation, I can do that. I find most of my executive clients are impatient with that. And if you were to measure this somehow in terms of fielding questions versus making statements, they're more inclined to ask me, you know, what do you think of something or another? And so I will respond by asking them what they think, and then they'll get back to me with that same question, and I'll say, well, in my view, and give them my view, and here's what it's based on, because my core values here are, first of all, valid information. So if I say something, they're in a position to evaluate it on some basis as to whether I'm full of it or whether, you know, I make some sort of a sense, and then they can make an informed choice about whether they want to go forward with anything. So back to the question of that you posed about, does the assessment info interfere? Yes, I think it does. Does it serve a useful purpose? I think it does for most of the leaders that I coach, because if you look at their positive leadership behaviors, it gets them rich data very quickly that can jumpstart coaching in faster, usually more thorough ways than most of 360s available. And with respect to the negative behaviors, the derailment risk, it sometimes gets information that would not come up otherwise. I mean, witness my client, Riley. He had sort of a nagging concern about, as he called it, wearing thin on others, but he really couldn't grasp what was going on. So I rambled a bit, but that's my thought.
Thank you. And let me tie this together so I make sure that I understand. So the assessment gives awareness, knowledge about self. And then it's still the choice of the client to proceed to change behavior or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Are you at a pausing point?
Oh, go ahead. I was still thinking.
Yeah. So the primary purpose of the Hogans, from my perspective, is to get to what I call strategic self-awareness, which is a buzzword, but it means that you're aware of a behavior, first of all, that you're aware of how, of your impact, so you're aware of how the behavior lands on other people. You're aware of the implications of all that for whatever leadership role you're in. So, quick aside, somebody's a big picture thinker, and in a strategic job, that's probably a nice fit. If the person is in an operational role, let's say he's charged with, plant safety, where things have got to be running very perfectly, maybe being a big thinker is not such a good thing. And then last but not least, the person ideally should have a sense of how he or she compares to other leaders, not because we're trying to do a rigorous analysis of that, but needs to know, am I up here or down here with respect to this particular result? So he's got a better way to gauge his behaviors. And then by all means, it's changing behaviors is up to the leader. And I typically ask, suggest that leaders defer that decision till they get through the feedback and, first of all, absorb it, and secondly, decide, do they really want to change anything, bearing in mind that it can be an arduous process.
Okay, now two things. Thank you. Rafael has his hand up, and then we'll go to Alfonso has a question, which I will repeat when Rafael is done.
So Robert, just so you know, I feel totally comfortable using assessments in an OD intervention, and it's actually expected. And I totally understand the impatience of executives who are not ready to take on, our non-directive approach, because they're usually looking for quick expertise and fast answers to what they're searching. Assessments have a place for me in my practice. What I have found, however, is that the kind of awareness that I can evoke through pure coaching tends to be more profound and actually more impactful on the awareness of the individual than when part of it is derived from an outside instrument that, by definition, is only semi-accurate to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's good statistics and good studies, but so so I just know I'm there with you because I use that. But the thing that I like about my coaching practice is being able to step in a separate space where things are approached differently and where I actually go for moments of awareness with the client that I could never achieve with an assessment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love to learn more about that. I think it's a little off point from today, so I hesitate to stay there. I'd be interested in, how you get to those places and what options you offer to clients and how long it takes you to get awareness. Maybe you've done some research on this or published some things, or we could have a side conversation.
Very good. I want to be part of that signed conversation. So, Alfonso, would you like me to read it, or would you like, you want, yes. So, Alfonso asks, what are you able to do when you have the personality assessment that you could not do without it in terms of coaching competencies? Thank you.
Well, I think one of the points is get to self-awareness in that more strategic sense that I mentioned sooner than would otherwise be possible. I think a second is to compare the, and so there's two aspects to that. One is broad and one is deep, meaning the broad part is that with the Hogan reports, you get feedback on all kinds of leadership behaviors. And it's typically more comprehensive just in terms of behaviors than any other form of feedback that I know about. And deeper because you get to these deeper insights that I've mentioned. Maybe not the deepness that Raphael is expressing, but deeper compared to most coaching interventions. So that's the first point. The second is that you're able to take the Hogans, if you use them the way that I do, which is typically at the start of a coaching engagement, you're able to compare that with the 360 data. And that's important because a likely behavior, according to the Hogans, may not be an actual behavior. That's what you find out from the 360. And therein lies an interesting question. Maybe the leader has, you know, some learned behaviors that have helped him cope with those potential career stallers or stoppers. And that's an important area to explore. The other thing is the Hogans, and I haven't gotten into describe the Hogans, but there are three assessments, and the third assessment is called the MVPI, the Motives, Values, and Preferences Inventory. So that gets into just what the words say. So what are your core values? What are your key drivers? And so on. And those are important for a lot of the reasons that I, some of which I've mentioned, which is good fit with work culture, a good job fit, and so on. But some of them go beyond it to say, well, given your values, what might be your blind spots? So that's an area that coaching can explore. Given your values, what's the culture that you as a leader would like to create? So again, all good topics for coaching. Hope that's responsive.
Okay.
It raises more questions for me, but I will put them later on.
Okay. Thank you. Sure.
One more. Yikes. Sorry. Thank you. Sorry, that was my mistake, Robert.
Jerry just asked me to unmute. Am I okay now, Jerry?
Yeah, that was my mistake. Sorry, there was one more comment in the chat. Can you offer this assessment in a group? I mean, could you lead a Hogan seminar so that we had experience? You mean this group, Charlotte?
Oh, conceptually, yes, but me personally, no.
Okay.
I think you'd need someone with more skills at group facilitation than I have. But it might be something to explore with the Hogan people, and maybe even to suggest for your local coaching associations. You know, I got motivated to really become serious and certified in the Hogan back some years ago when I met Bob Hogan when he gave a keynote to the ICF Converge, as I think it was then called, over here in Washington. He and others speak regularly to coaching organizations. And, you know, if you have an opportunity, grab it.
So Alfonso writes, how does your knowledge of the client's personality or competencies impact your attitude of not knowing that this is highly evaluated in masterful coaching?
Yeah, maybe he could, or you could elaborate on that question, because I'm not sure I got it.
I'm not either.
Let me say it in English. If I know things about my client before starting the coaching relationship, that could affect my position, my presence, my way of understanding the language and the client's language. It could affect my attitude of being just curious. I understand that all these tools, I'm a PhD in psychology, and I know that these tools may create a lot of awareness in the client.
I got it, and it's a real important issue, and I think it's problematic for many people, particularly when they start using the Hogans. I'm pretty experienced, and I still have to check myself, meaning that the Hogan data only suggests certain things. So any interpretation that I draw based on the Hogan data is, first of all, only a working hypothesis. So it's something you have to check with a client. Second, I have to guard against jumping to conclusions myself because of what you said. And third, the art of interpretation, and this is not something that is stressed enough, I think, in the Hogan official materials, but the art of really good interpretation is framing discovery questions, which draw out the client on, well, what actually is going on here, rather than, you seem to be this, that, or the other thing. You see what I mean? So I take your point, and it's something to be very aware of when you do the feedback, when you do your own interpretation of it before meeting the client, and then you're in the debrief as part of an assessment feedback session.
Okay. See that Elena's hand is up, but I have a note that Jerry has had a question for a while about 360. So I'm going to let Jerry, if you still have your question.
Oh, thank you. It was just because, Robert, you said that 360s are not all equals.
Yeah, yeah.
There are differences. So if you can provide some more information about if you have found some of them more useful about something and others for others things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. The big beef I have about most 360s is that they fail to reflect, they've got a big blind spot. They fail to reflect the fact that strengths overdone become weaknesses. And again, there's a lot of data on this. And part of the problem is in the rating scales that are used by these 360s. So if you take the usual 360 inventory, it's a you know, 5 to 7 scale questionnaire. And it's how often, there are frequency questions, or how effective. And the trouble with that is that higher scores are generally considered better scores. And like the song says, it ain't necessarily so. You could have, you know, higher scores by a leader who's overdoing a particular behavior and no way of knowing that. So what I like is what Rob Kaiser calls the Goldilocks scale. So it's a 7-point scale, but it ranges from doing way too little to way too much. And like Goldilocks, the middle of the scale is the best score that you can get. And he's developed, along with some colleagues, a 360 that I really like, which pairs nicely with the Hogan, called the Leadership Versatility Index. And it uses that scale and also some questions which work well with the Hogans.
Thank you. Because, yeah, that opens another question, which is that I was thinking at the beginning. So a 360 or any assessment is a point of view. It's a perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we can do a 360 or another one. We have different perspectives. So when you pick one or any Hogan assessment for personality, so you are inviting the client to observe from that perspective. How do you deal about the risk of taking that as a fact and offer other perspective as well to compare if you do that? I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see. Let me try and answer and get back to me if I haven't got it. But I invite clients in 360 feedback sessions to accept the data as perceptions. So they're your work reputation, how others see you, and to your point, people up here are going to see you differently than your peers here or your direct reports, all right? So you can expect there to be some inconsistency in the data there. And from their viewpoint, their perceptions are valid. So you should consider that as valid data. Maybe not the facts that you would like, but the perceptions are valid from that perspective. Now, does that get to your question? Okay, good.
I will give it to Elena, but I want to make one comment following this. I was involved with, I was mentoring someone, and the person said the 360 that came back that I'm supposed to coach, all four peers at a high level management level said that this person was involved in sexually harassing someone in her department. And I had the belief, well, if it's four different people, it must be fact. But I was advised by ICF to go to the general counsel. And the general counsel said, who said this is true? And I went, I didn't think of that option. And it wasn't true. They had specifically ganged up on this person to try to get rid of this person. So that's an unusual situation, but I just, that was a lesson for me.
Okay. Well, so I would like to hastily amend what I just said to say, stay open to the possibility it's not true.
So point. Elena, and then after Elena, I'm going to ask Robert if he wants to still present something that you're burning to present us with, since we've cut into most of your time, as we tend to do, with good questions and answers. Elena, please.
Well, it's only if it perhaps my point of view could help. in my opinion, because I have been work with psychometrics in different situations and with assessment also doing executive coaching. And for me, the issue is not is useful or not, it's how to use the test. Mm-hmm. Because when we are coaches, we are asking every time. And a test are questions to our client. It's exactly the same dynamic. They answer some questions that are in a paper, you know? And they increase their awareness and their self-knowledge looking them in this mirror. It's not an firm and not moving and a static mirror. I prepare them to receive the feedback saying this is just some answers to some questions that yourself, first of all, in the self-knowledge, in the self-evaluation or assessment, those are your own answers. Mm-hmm. Nobody is coming. It's the client who has answered this test.
Yeah.
Not the friend, not the mother, not the father, himself or herself. Mm-hmm. So, and also I love to use a special dynamic to play with the feedback. That if I can, normally this test have different factors, different variables. So I began with them saying the meaning of each factor and ask them to value themselves with not knowing the results in the scale.
Yes.
If the first personality factor is extroversion, for example, and extroversion is to how mm-hmm. do you feel that you are going to be in extroversion? And they say high or low or whatever. And afterwards, they discover their own results in the test. So to be the difference or not difference between the different values is very, very, they have a lot of insights. Oh my God, I thought that was done. So it's a very good job to reflect and to see what Jerry was saying. There are infinite points of view of one reality, and how beautiful is to see myself from different perspectives. And at the same time, those perspectives are moving all the time. They are not static. Even being personality, because I said that personality is not an static issue. Okay?
Yes. Yeah. So I like what you said, and to me, it reinforces the value of what sometimes called a self-report, meaning how you see yourself, and then you can compare that with other views. Well, let me take a few minutes more, and Terry, you, of course, are our fearless leader here, so cut me off or redirect me as you see fit, but I was going to continue with some personality assessment pros and cons, and I'll be very brief given the time. The first is I think it leads to more insight and self-awareness than would otherwise be possible. The second is that it nicely complements multi-source feedback, particularly if it's prepared with a good, robust 360, and indeed, I think those two, the combination is really a best practice for developing leaders in organizations. The third is that personality assessments are increasingly favored by savvy chief human resource officers and coaching program leads, and even a few leaders, though most of them don't really recognize differences among the assessments that we use, I think, nor ask for particular ones. And lastly, personality assessments might offer you some collateral benefits depending on your practices. So the Hogan's, for instance, can be extremely helpful in selection. I don't play in that space, but I'm told by people that do that they're very, very helpful. So also they can be used for team development, and same comment applies. So as to the cons, I think a biggie is that the Hogans, at least, are very complicated. And, you know, so also is human behavior, by the way. But the Hogans have three assessments, 27 main scales, 40-plus subscales. And the Hogans, it's not the high score is good and the low score is bad. It's that a high score has so many, has these implications that are likely, a low score has these possibilities, and so you really have to learn all of that if you want to be skilled at helping a client connect the dots. And a related drawback is that they take time to interpret and debrief. I typically spend, 2 hours or so in 2 or 3 debriefs for the Hogans. So that's a lot of time to spend on assessments, and it's possible to do that in less. And if we have time, I could tell you more about that, but I don't do that myself. So last and not least, they take time to learn and practice to skillfully interpret and skillfully debrief. So let's see, are we about at the hour? I guess we are. Maybe that's a good point to pause.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much, Robert, for stimulating conversation and thought and increasing awareness, all the things we love in our profession, and you've been wonderful at facilitating that and sharing your wisdom and experience. Very useful.
Yeah. Good to be with you.
June 7th. Many of us will be back because Jerry Spoto, raise your hand. That Jerry is going to be presenting Difference Versus Variation, Awareness of a New Perspective. It's going to be a juicy conversation because I was part of the beginning of this. And I can't wait for it. So June 7th, see you all back. And let all your colleagues know, because we still don't have a system. The registration system isn't up and running yet.
Oh, all right.
So thank you all very much. This will be on the Sun website.